Good evening and welcome to Open Air with Sherry Huber on World Talk Radio. I'm your host, Michael Gray, and in today's show, we'll be talking about conscious, compassionate awareness and taking your calls. So keep it tuned here, and we'll be right back. Good evening and welcome to Open Air with Sherry Huber on World Talk Radio. I'm excited to announce tonight that we have a special guest on our show today. I'd like to welcome Melinda Guyal, who's a monk at the Zen Monastery Peace Center in Murfrees, California. Welcome, Melinda.
Thank you, Michael. It's very good to be here. I'm having a little bit of trouble hearing you. I don't know if it's possible to get the sound jacked up a little bit at your end.
Right. Okay. Well, I'll see what we can do at this end. How are you doing today?
Very well. As I was waiting for your call, I was sitting here breathing.
Yes.
And just really enjoying breathing.
Yes.
I've been having a new experience of breathing recently, and I really encourage everybody to take it up.
Great. So it sounds like you're more attentive to it or having a deeper experience of it.
Yes, and looking at how I'm not doing it, which came as something of a surprise when I realized that I really, there's at least some part of me who believes that that part is in charge of the breath.
Yes.
And slips right in when I'm not looking. So
yes.
Very nice to be aware that it's actually life breathing.
Yes. Great. My experience, it brings me right back here.
Say that again, Michael?
In my experience, it brings me right back to the moment.
Right back to the moment. Yep. Yep. Such a wonderful anchor the breath is. When we stray away from the moment, it's there waiting for us whenever we remember to come back.
Yes, yes. Melinda, I'm excited. We have a lineup of callers here.
Ah, fabulous.
Great. I'd like to welcome Laura from Hawaii. You're on Open Air with Sherry Huber.
Hi, Michael. Hi, Melinda.
Hi.
Laura?
Laura.
Laura. Hi, Laura.
Hi, and thank you for saying that about breathing, because I was sitting here, this is my first time calling, and just going, okay, I'm just going to breathe,
yeah.
I'm just going to breathe.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah, nothing to think about, just breathe,
mm-hmm.
and you know, whatever
mm-hmm.
you want to say will be said.
Yeah. And it's also, I mean, it's always been very comforting when I think that I'm in charge of something and I realize, you know, I'm not even in charge of my own breathing.
Yeah.
So what makes me think I can control the world or any part of it? Or
does she need to?
Yeah, exactly.
We don't have to take those jobs on. They're being handled very nicely without our help.
Mm. Yes, thank you for saying that. which kind of brings me to why I called. I'm actually feeling like I need some support, so I'm just going to put this out there. I was born with very small eyes, and the condition that goes with that is very poor vision,
mm-hmm.
And as I age, glaucoma is another side effect. And so I've done numerous things over the years to deal with this. And the latest kind of end-of-the-road thing is surgery.
Mm-hmm.
And so I have had a number of surgeries. And because my eyes are very small, they're very complicated, and technically it's very difficult. But I'm... not to go into a lot of detail, but I did lose the vision in my one eye as a complication of surgery.
Mm, lost it completely?
No, I still have some light. You know, I can see light. It's
mm-hmm.
just, it's you know, it's very blurry and functionally not really there.
Yeah.
But, and now I am facing another surgery in my seeing eye. And I have had surgery in that eye before, which turned out okay, but wasn't a long-term solution to the glaucoma.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not living in where I was living when I had the other surgeries, and so I'm feeling like I don't have the support system here that I had before, although I'm very confident in the surgeons that are going to be doing the work, and, you know, they know their stuff. And,
but you've
and
had
so
a
I,
support team around you before that isn't going to be available with the next surgery.
Correct,
yeah.
Correct. Yeah, yeah. So I just thought I would call in and see if you had any suggestions or guidance or
And what do you recognize as things that assist you when you are in a situation where you can really use some support? I hear that there are friends, there are people who have supported you that aren't available now.
Mm-hmm.
And are there other ways that you have of kind of being there in a way that you support you?
Well, I have noticed that I've really increased my practice and been much more consistent about that.
That's huge,
and
isn't it?
It really is, because I'm really noticing stuff now that, you know, that before I would have gone, oh, I'm crabby today, but now I'm just, like, really noticing, like, what is that about, and what's that fear, and, you know, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
So I think that's a big piece of it.
Yeah, yeah. To me, that's sort of right there at the top of the list of ways that we truly support ourselves and just get enormous benefits from that, being there with ourselves.
Mm-hmm. The other thing that came to me just recently was I recognized, like, I had my first eye surgery when I was, I think, 5 or 6 years old,
mm-hmm.
and there is still that young part of me,
yes,
who's very, very scared.
Yes.
And so I have been, you know, consciously trying to support and be compassionate and kind and gentle and loving and all those kinds of things to her.
You're staying aware of that 5-year-old, who was traumatized.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and who still goes into this and is now having multiple repeats of the experience.
Right.
So being traumatized again and again, but you're seeing, and it sounds like, being able to keep that part of you in mind and really be gentle with her.
Mhm.
Mhm.
Mhm. Mhm. And this is just, this last piece has just been pretty recent. I mean, I've done lots of work with parts over the years, but this one just made herself known recently.
Yeah,
it really is. It's She's when it's
there
time.
For as long as however old you are, since five years old.
Mm-hmm.
And now she's letting you into her life in a way. So you must have been ready to receive her.
Yes, I guess I was.
Yeah, because it seems like those parts will, you know, wait until we're ready.
So it sounds like maybe, like, this, the first part of this procedure is 2 weeks from tomorrow, actually. So maybe my thing to do, besides the sitting a lot, is spending time with her.
That sounds like bullseye.
Okay. Alrighty.
And you know, some ways of doing that, and you may already be using some techniques like this, but one way is to dialogue with her. And you could even try using your non-dominant hand to let it speak for her. And to sort of look, sort of be with her in the way you imagine you at 5 years old would like somebody to have been with you.
Right. Yes.
Chances are probably good that you didn't get the support then that you needed. or that might have made things a little bit less traumatic.
Yeah, because it just was what it was.
Yeah, and people probably didn't have a clue what that little five-year-old was experiencing inside.
Oh, no. No, just quite the opposite, actually. Which is fine at this point, because it just was what it was.
It was what it was, and you know what she needed.
Right, exactly.
You're the absolutely best person in the universe to to respond in the way that she really needs to be responded to.
Right, right. I will not force-feed her cream of wheat with her bandaged eyes, I promise. Thank you so much, is it Melinda?
It's Melinda. Thank you so much for calling in, Laura, and the very best of luck with the process that you're about to go through.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for joining us, Laura. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber on World Talk Radio. We have a special guest today. Melinda Guyal is a monk at the Zen Monastery Peace Center, and she's here with us on the phone. Melinda, we have another caller.
Ah, very fine.
I'd like to welcome Dawn from Los Angeles. You're on Open Air with Sherry Huber.
Hi, Melinda.
Hi, is it Dawn?
Dawn, yes, from Los Angeles.
Thank you. Thank you. I can hear you much better than I can hear Michael, so I have
good. And I have a very strong voice, so that should help.
Great.
I have a classic case here, and I'm just looking for some support. I kind of know what's going on, but it's a classic case of conditioning making me miserable through duality.
Its favorite structure.
Yeah, well, what's been going on is I've been pursuing a job in San Francisco, which obviously would require relocation, since January, and this is like, you know, I've made this big story in my head. This is the dream job. I have to have it. It will change my life.
And so perfect that you're seeing that it's a story.
Yeah, and now I have the offer, and all of a sudden, I don't want to live there. It's not enough money. Los Angeles is great. What's wrong with me? And I'm having trouble. I think this is duality, correct?
Well, it sounds like you're, yes.
And self-hate and all the other stuff.
Yeah, because you had the dream job, and you had these fantasies of, oh, life is going to be so beautiful when I get the job, and then, oh, my God, I got the job. Life is going to be horrible.
Right, and there's a little bit of that sickening dread, knowing I have to take it because I've now made this into this story and this dream job and everything. And
you have to take it? So that's part of the story?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
It's like I'm, you know, damned if I do, damned if I don't.
Exactly. It's the classic lose-lose of duality.
It really is. Something's wrong, not enough. And I'm having trouble disidentifying. I mean, I think talking it out live and not in my brain helps. But
yes, always.
Yeah. So, yeah. But I'm just having trouble. I'm still kind of believing that mistakes are possible, though. So I'm still thinking, well, what if I go and it was the wrong move, and I end up poor and you know, alone and miserable.
So that's what conditioning is telling you would be the result of the so-called mistake, is that you would just be an utter failure, and next thing is probably the shopping cart on the street.
Right, and then I turn it around and say to myself, fine, don't go, and I stay here. And then it's, oh, my God, well, if you stay here, you're never going to meet anyone, and you're going to be stuck in a miserable job. And, I mean, so really it's the lose-lose, and I'm on to it.
Yep.
And is there any, I mean, other than just continuing to try and disidentify, is this?
Well, that's a really good first step. Coming back to the breath is always helpful, as we were talking about earlier. And it may be helpful to notice that when the voices are talking to you about, you know, if you move, it's going to be a mistake, and if you stay, it's going to be a mistake, that they're referring to you as you.
Right, they just hate me.
Yeah, but it's not I voices. So it's a clue that conditioning is, that the duality is being held in place by conditioning, because it's saying you.
It is saying you.
Who is that?
It's my father.
Who's
now living in my brain.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, and still, you know, you're still receiving the messages that you received when he was living outside your brain.
Right. I actually have a subpersonality that I've named after him.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So one technique that Sherry sometimes offers that I have found really helpful is to spend, I don't know how much time you have to reply, yes, I'll take the job and I'm on my way, or if you've already said that.
Oh, no, I haven't. I could stall them another 5 or 6 days, though.
Yeah, to spend 2 of those days as if you were going to move.
Uh-huh.
See what that feels like. And then 2 of those days deciding that you're going to stay and see what that feels like.
Oh, I like that.
And if worse comes to worse, flip a coin.
Yeah. Well, that's kind of, I mean, that's almost, I hate to trivialize it, but the back and forth in my brain, it really has come down to, like, you know, who cares? At certain points, I'm just like, who cares?
Yeah.
I'm going to be okay no matter what.
That's, and it's really, it's so neat that you can get the who cares, because conditioning would like to have you going ping pong ball back and forth, and it just completely wear you out.
Mm-hmm.
And to get to a place of whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's going to tell you that if you move and you hate it, that that's the end of your life. But I would suspect that it's not going to be the end of the life.
Right. And the funny part is I've lived there before, so I kind of know what it's all about there. I mean, there's worse places to live.
There are, yeah.
I'm not much closer to the monastery, so.
Hey, now there is a really good
There's a really good argument
for San Francisco.
Exactly. I like
I'm
your
a little biased, though.
Yeah. I like your suggestion, though, of the 2 days, you know, in the mode of I'm moving and then 2 days in the mode of I'm not, and see how that feels.
Yeah, and maybe record what the voices tell you in those 2 days.
Okay. That's a great suggestion. Thank you.
Good. Well, good luck.
Thank you. You've been helpful.
Oh, good.
Thanks for joining us, Dawn. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber on World Talk Radio. Melinda, I was remembering Sherry talking once about, you know, should I move to this place or not?
Uh-huh.
And Sherry was bringing up the issue that, you know, most transportation goes in both directions.
Yeah. That's very good. Yes.
And I had to laugh when I heard that. And Melinda, we have 2 more callers lined up still.
All right.
I'd like to welcome William from Pennsylvania. You're on Open Air with Sherry Huber.
Hi, William.
William, are you there? Okay. We've lost William.
We've lost William. That's
and our next caller is Beth from Pittsburgh. Beth,
hello.
Are you there? Oh, great.
Hey, Beth.
Hey, Melinda. I was really excited when I got onto the computer tonight and heard that you were hosting.
Uh-huh.
Thank you for that.
It's good to hear from you.
I have been really caught in things meaning something.
Oh.
And things
is that just
mattering?
Painful, especially when you know they don't.
Yeah. Yeah, but, I mean, there's still that kind of, like, reminder that they don't. But I'm pretty much, and I've got proof.
You've got proof that they mean something?
That it means something and it matters.
Ah. And who's supplying the proof?
Yeah. Pretty much my head.
Question the authority.
Yes. Yes. There's. I've been kind of looking at that control place.
Control place. Yeah.
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 Kind of
well,
like
what another name is conditioning.
Yeah. Or safety.
Ah, safety.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Or we might say the illusion of safety.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
It isn't, yes. Yes.
Uh-huh. And then there's
breath. Yeah. And it's like coming to that place when of, there's just like this sense of disquietude.
Yeah. Say more.
Well, I remember once in guidance at the monastery being told, you know, it's like, how a snake loses its skin is between a rock and a hard place.
Yes.
And kind of finding that, you know, I have a conditioned part that gets hysterical.
Okay.
And then there's all this meaning about that.
Uh-huh.
And what I'm seeing is that hysterical actually, and this is very humbling to see, is really a control thing.
Okay.
It's like it usually...
So you get hysterical, or a part of you gets hysterical, and what you're seeing It sounds like from a not quite caught in it perspective, is that the hysterical is about some kind of control.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, sometimes, I mean, it's not all the time about that, but it's like when I kind of like was allowing the hysteria to kind of be there.
Yeah.
And kind of seeing underneath it, I was really upset about not getting my way.
Oh, it was kind of a tantrum sort of hysterical.
But a very artful one.
An artful tantrum. That's an interesting picture to try to paint, isn't it?
Yeah.
An artful tantrum, okay.
Yeah, and kind of noticing that, I've had this lifetime pattern.
Well, and it sounds like if I'm understanding what you're pointing at with artful tantrum, it sounds like you're aware that there is some motive to the tantrum.
Well, to continuing
an
the tantrum.
Agenda.
To keeping it going.
Keeping it going, yeah.
Yeah, because I'm starting to see that there's a point where this stuff is just coming up. You know, I don't like this place. I'm not liking what I'm experiencing.
Uh-huh.
But then it's like, then it kind of moves into a hysterical place.
Uh-huh. So I don't like something, and then there's this movement into hysteria.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And what happens after that?
I'm still exploring that. And then remember, like at the monastery, going through these phases of eventually breaking out.
And we might say disidentifying.
Yeah.
Uh huh.
Yeah.
So stepping far enough back from being caught in the story that you can actually see a little bit more clearly that it is a story.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes. There's a hesitancy because there's a part of me that still wants to believe the story.
Really hard to let go of it.
Yeah.
Hard to pry those little fingers off the story.
Well, yeah, it's my survival.
And what? Say more about that. It's your survival.
No idea.
So it's interesting because what just went through is it's almost like if I let go of the story, I'll die.
Yeah.
Which is back to that wonderful Zen place of what's probably true is that if I let go of the story, I'll have a life.
Yeah. Yeah.
Good old Zen paradox.
Yeah. Yes.
Mm-hmm. But it feels more like I'm really going to survive if I get to stay stuck in the same thing I've been stuck in most of my life.
And and it's not much of a life.
And it's not much of a life. Yeah. 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 But it would convince you that letting go would be worse.
You were talking about like living on the streets and being a bag lady.
Right. But, you know, that might be preferable. given the amount of suffering, it sounds like you experience when you're caught in it.
Yes. Yes. There is a tremendous amount of suffering when I am caught in it.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's like there's kind of an awareness that I'm identified.
Yes.
But it's not disidentifying.
Right, right. Well, what might be interesting, Beth, is to try going along with the program and saying, okay, you win, whatever.
Yeah, yes. Kind of allowing whatever, allowing and pushing nothing away.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
Yes. Yes, I was feeling quite identified this evening, and I think I've had a glimpse of the other opportunities available.
Uh-huh. Yeah, there is a doorway in that dark room.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, I've been very grateful for the Radio Show Weekly to have that kind of a reminder.
Yeah, and I hope you remember to give yourself, to acknowledge for yourself how hard you're working.
I can't do that.
Yeah. That would be a little bit like turning the light on.
Well, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. How hard and how consistently?
Wow. And compassion.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah. Yeah.
Yes.
Never fails.
Thank you.
Gusto to you, Beth.
Okay.
Thanks for joining us, Beth. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber on World Talk Radio. Melinda, we're going to take a quick break here, and we'll be back in a couple of minutes.
Okay.
Welcome back. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber on World Talk Radio. We're having a fun show today, and we have a special guest with us. Melinda Guyal is a monk at the Zen Monastery Peace Center in Murphys, California, and she's with us on the phone today. It's been fun so far, Melinda.
It certainly has. It's really neat that there are lots of callers.
Yes, and there are more still.
All right.
And just before we get on to that, I wanted to mention two things that I was noticing. One is the real power of laughter, you know, to get us here and to stop believing that really serious story.
Yes, it is virtually impossible in my experience to stay identified if you have a good belly laugh about something.
Yes.
So, yeah. Yep.
Yeah, I think it seems to me that in practice, you know, I've had more laughing and more just letting go in that laughter. It's just wonderful.
Yes.
And the second thing I wanted to mention is the Reflective Listening Buddy Program.
Very good.
Which for me has just been so wonderful, and especially for people who are not physically close.
Yes, it is, and I understand it's growing by leaps and bounds. And we might say a little bit about how it works.
Please go ahead.
Just in terms of people are paired up with someone whom they don't know, and they each spend. I think they have a half-hour phone call each week. You can correct me, Michael. If
that's correct.
I'm picky on the details.
That's correct.
And each person speaks for 15 minutes, and the other person purely reflects what they're saying.
Right.
So it's an opportunity to do this practice and bring whatever you're looking at, rather like we do on the radio show, and have someone hear you and reflect what they hear.
Yes.
And it's just I've heard nothing but rave reviews about it.
That's been my experience as well.
Yeah.
And to me, the beauty of that, just pure reflecting back what I'm saying in my own words.
Yes. Yes. So we can act, because we often seem to not hear ourselves when we speak.
Yes. And particularly when I think.
When you think when you're speaking, yeah.
Yes. Yes. Great. Ready for the next caller, Melinda?
Yes.
I'd like to welcome Dave from Dallas. You're on Open Air with Sherry Huber.
Hello?
Hey, Dave, is it?
Yes. Melinda, is it?
Pardon me?
What is your name, Melinda?
Melinda, yes.
Hi, Melinda. How are you?
Good.
All right. I have a question. I asked Sherry this before, but I don't know. I don't know if I wasn't clear or what, but didn't get an answer. You know, I understand the concept of finding what you love and going for it, not struggling really, just go for it. So Cherry would say, well, if you wanna, you know, if you like animals and, you know, just have a go out and work with animals. You like planting flowers, plant flowers. You want end hunger, go feed the hungry.
Mm-hmm.
That's easy to me to understand, but when it comes to let's say, trying to bring some change in, let's say, social conditioning, let's say racism, that will require some resistance against what's being imposed. So it's a different kind of struggle, and I don't know how to do it, because I find myself in situations where I have to deal with social conditioning, and it's having an impact in my life.
Mm-hmm.
And so the way, you know, of no struggle, I don't find it here. There's a way that you have to stand before the person and say, I'm not going to allow you to treat me with a different standard.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that kind of thing. And it would involve some clash, you know, of sorts.
Mm-hmm.
And so I don't find the place where how to do that with joy in your heart, you know.
Uh-huh.
There's always an amount of resistance, because you are resistant somehow.
Mm-hmm. So in your experience, when you come up against something like racism, you really can't see how it's possible to kind of be okay with that, or not in some form put up resistance against it.
No, I don't want to be okay with that. Let's put it that way.
Right.
It's like Martin Luther King said, you know, is there are some things that I never want to be well adjusted, and I'm maladjusted to racism.
Mm-hmm.
So that I have clear, and then I don't know what I want is, yes, I want to change somehow the conditions, you know, that
the externals.
The external condition, the social conditioning that has an impact in my life. So how do you go about that? It's not like planting. I envy the guy that my passion is planting flowers, and that's all I want, and, you know, just go for that. But
mm-hmm.
to me, it would involve, you know, facing up, you know, people, conflict. How you do that?
Well, you know what I would suggest is, and it's a little bit of an advertisement at the same time, but Sherry's most recent book is called Making a Change for Good.
Okay.
And I think that you might find a number of pointers in there to kind of help guide you as you look at what you're looking at.
Uh-huh.
It's a wonderful little book.
Okay.
Put out by Shambhala Press.
All right.
And you can hear from the title probably that it actually might be quite relevant for you.
Say the title again.
Making a Change for Good.
Making a Change for Good. Yeah. I would love to find something very specific on that. I have CDs of Cherry. I have books of her. I listen to the talk. So once you know, I went over all that. It's like it is the same message. You know, it's the same good, great message, kind of changing here. But I haven't found so far something very specific to this.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So. But do you have, I mean, I'll check it out, but did you have or do you know people that are in that path? You know, I wonder where Martin Luther King was coming from, you know. Was he doing it with joy, or was it something that he couldn't, he had to do, or, I mean, he talks about struggle all the time, so now the new talk that is around these days is almost against struggle, you know. But people like Martin Luther King and Gandhi will speak about struggle. And so now it's like struggle is having a bad name.
Well, and I think they also speak about struggle from a place that we might call center. A place where they're actually not
they're not caught in the experience of struggle. They are coming from a place of peace or of joy, as you say.
Mm.
And that was a huge way to have an impact for social good. But they had to work on themselves first.
That's right. Okay.
That's the direction that in this practice that we do, it's the direction that we look. We can waste a lot of energy trying to change the externals. When we actually turn inward and find the joy and peace and compassion that are within, then we can really have an impact.
Okay.
But it doesn't come from a place of fighting.
Right. I'm trying to do both, but it gets to a point, you know, I'm working very hard.
Hear it's not working for you.
Yeah, but I work on myself a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And it gets to a point like, okay, I'm not going to wait until I'm Jesus Christ to say stop, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like I'm trying to find the middle ground. All right, it's not going to come perfect. You know, I'm not Martin Luther King so far. It may come with a little fight or something, but I have to, you know, put it out there and start experimenting.
Yeah, well, if you'd like to check out that book, I really feel like it might have something for you.
All right, I will.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for calling, Dave.
Thanks for joining us, Dave. You are listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber on World Talk Radio. Melinda, we actually have two more callers lined up.
All right.
I'd like to welcome Eric from Oakland. You're on Open Air with Sherry Huber.
Hello, Melinda. This is Eric.
Hey, Eric.
How are you doing?
Doing very well, thank you. And you?
Good. I was just listening to the program earlier, and one of the previous callers was talking about, the decision about coming up to San Francisco for the job and that kind of thing. And
yes.
The duality.
The duality.
The duality, yeah, and I was recognizing that for me, as I'm doing more practice, I feel like I'm able to let go of things more as they pass, and not regret things, and not kind of let go of the past more easily. But I feel like I always have to have some kind of drama on my plate of some decision that I feel like I can never figure out. And it's always, if it's not one thing, it's you know, something, the next thing. And then I go through these different periods when I build up, you know, I get multiple decisions that have to be made at the same time. So it creates like this crisis mode. And then, mm-hmm. and then I feel like I'm just completely, pinned down by this crisis mode. And I don't even know who's in control anymore.
Yeah, and I hear it sounds like this repeats and repeats and repeats. You keep finding yourself in crisis mode because somehow all these decisions keep arising at the same time, and as you say, you've got some drama on your plate.
Well, and it's kind of like as though I need, I mean, it's, in a way it seems like kind of like an addiction, like I need like some degree of indecision around all the time, but then occasionally I have to have like these incredible, just massive, like almost like binges of a tremendous decision to time when I feel like I just can barely survive through, and then I don't even, you know, and I also get these images of kind of like I've got like a, you know, like kind of like a team of sub-personalities, and the ones that are in charge are kind of like the sort of the bullies or the really ignorant kind of people on the team or something. And then I kind of think, well, who's the real Eric? And he's kind of like the guy that is pushed around all the time, and no one trusts that he's smart enough to figure out what to do, so that no one ever listens to him, and it's just...
And he's getting a lot of advice from a lot of different directions, it sounds like, internally.
Yeah, and it's kind of like, and I don't feel like I don't trust myself to know that I can figure out what's best for me.
Which may be a good thing, since we're really encouraged not to try to figure things out.
Not
try to think ourselves out of a duality that is sort of set in the cement of conditioning. that sort of arises because of all those thoughts in the first place.
Okay, but then how do I figure out what voice to trust, or what to do, or how to move beyond this desire to always have a constant crisis decision?
Well, it might be helpful, and you may already have done this, to look at how that serves you. What do you get out of it? Because you've made it pretty clear that it's been with you for a really, really long time.
Yeah.
Either in the form of, sort of an ongoing underlying indecision, or a great big crisis that arises with all of a bunch of decisions you believe you have to make at once, or conflicting decisions. What does it do?
Well, it makes me feel powerless. Like other people are almost like, there's other forces that are stronger than me that are going to determine how I feel, and these.
We can kind of hear the voice of maybe a 4-year-old in that, can't we?
Yeah,
that would be the age I'd go back to for those people are all telling me what to do, and I don't have any power here.
Yeah. And just the feeling like, well, I'm not smart enough or strong enough or anything to figure it out, so I'm just going to be forced to go along with someone else's program.
So it's a great big self-hate operation, isn't it?
Well, yeah, I mean, it's like a way of guaranteeing that I'll never feel good about the decision before, during, or after the process.
Yeah, so what you get out of this process that keeps repeating for you is just to feel like you're never going to get it, like you'll always be miserable, and it's because you're not smart enough or strong enough or whatever the enoughs are. Basically, it sounds like it's a really effective device for keeping you in suffering.
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So then, okay. But then I guess the whole point is just what to do. Okay, try to bring awareness to the practice.
Is there anybody in there being kind to you?
I don't know. I think in a way I kind of feel like I'm being kind if I'm to myself, if I kind of avoid or run away from something that seems difficult. Is that the only way I kind of feel like, well, I'm getting out of it, I'm escaping?
Yeah, and you might want to take a few second looks at that, because it sounds a little bit like conditioning might be creating something that it wants you to believe is kindness.
Yeah, I don't think it really is genuine kindness. It's just kind of like that's what's my only sort of escape or solace or feeling of I feel in control is when I feel like I'm running away.
So what would be genuinely kind? Genuinely kind. What was the first thing? Did you have something come to mind?
Well, just accepting myself and feeling good about myself and not feeling like I have to do or
that
accomplish or anything to feel better.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, so I just, in your shoes or what I'm projecting you're experiencing, I would really appreciate having somebody speaking to me kindly and accepting how I'm struggling with what I'm struggling with, rather than telling me what a loser I am for having the struggle. That's not particularly kind.
Yeah, well, I mean, like the compassionate friend or the compassionate
that
voice.
Yes.
Bringing that person in to try to make the peace or letting that person have his say.
Yeah, and not necessarily to try to help me figure things out, but just to be there with me and appreciate how much struggle I'm having as I go through the motions of trying to figure things out.
Mm-hmm.
So, in other words, sort of looking at it from a perspective of not believing that compassionate being is going to jump into the conditioning with me.
not believing that the compassionate being is going to go along with the
right
self hate.
Right. The compassion is there to accept me unconditionally,
uh-huh.
No matter what I'm caught in, no matter what my drama is.
Yeah.
Loves me and loves me with or without the drama.
Yeah, well, that's good. Presence. Yeah, to bring into that when I start getting feeling like I'm losing control or something.
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
Worth trying.
What's that?
Is it worth trying?
Oh yes. Worth trying. Yeah, I think of like the idea of like all these people battling it out and just trying to find kind of a way to make the peace and recognize that I can't necessarily make them go away.
No, but you could come back to your breath as often as you think of it.
Uh huh.
And say nice things to yourself.
But is it useful to think of it as being a battle? Like, well, where's the real Eric in there is going to get stronger, and he's going to be, you know. Telling the other sub-personalities to kind of...
What's your experience of that, Eric?
well, that doesn't seem to work.
They've been duking it out for a long time, huh?
Yeah.
Hasn't worked yet, so...
So, I mean, I don't know if that's a useful metaphor. I mean, maybe that's not a... I kind of feel like there's part of me that just gets beaten up all the time and looking for a constantly situation to get beaten up.
And so,
I mean, just to treat that part of me with compassion, but not feel like, okay, well, you're going to get beefed up and stronger and you're going to take all those on.
Yeah. Does that feel to you does that really soothing?
I don't know. It just seems like almost like the battle intensity of the battle will just increase. Then,
yeah. Instead of maybe that compassionate presence can step between the part of you who's getting beaten up and the bullies that are there with or without boxing gloves on.
Uh huh.
So to say kind things. In a way that blocks out what the unruly mob.
I mean, like the compassionate voice can at least try to stop the abuse. I mean,
get between the one who's being abused and the abusers, and take care of the. You know, it's the classic abuse is let's get the child out of the home.
Uh-huh.
Before we do anything else. Let's get the child away from the abusers.
Okay, and make that part of me, the abused child part of me, just get him somewhere where he feels safe.
Where he feels safe and he feels like somebody's looking out for him.
Yeah.
Because right now it sounds like nobody is.
No. Yeah, that's right. Yep. All right.
Okay.
Well, that's good. Helpful.
All right.
Okay.
Thanks for calling in, Eric.
Yeah, thanks a lot. All right. Mm-hmm. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for joining us, Eric. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber on World Talk Radio. Melinda, we are at the end of our hour.
Oh, gosh.
And it went just like lightning.
It's been such a good hour. I really appreciate all the folks who called in, and I think there may have been one caller left kind of stranded out there in internet land.
Yes, and I encouraged her to call back next week. And I wanted to add one small thing, Melinda, that Sherry often adds, which is to call us back and let us know.
Call us back and let us know.
Yeah, after calling into the show and...
let us know how it's going.
Exactly.
We'd love to. That's yes. Thank you, Michael. I really appreciate your adding that.
You're welcome. And thanks for joining us today, Melinda.
My great pleasure.
Okay.
Thank you, Michael.
Good night.
Bye-bye.